Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Tenderfoot listeners. I'm Liam Luxon, host of Status Untraced, a new podcast brought to you from the team behind Up and Vanished. It follows my investigation into the disappearance of Justin Alexander, a survivalist and world traveler whose life seemed like it was torn from the pages of an adventure novel. While some of Justin's friends and family believe he may have been murdered, it's not clear what actually happened. And a message he left behind just days before he vanished makes everything about his disappearance just strange. Check out this clip featuring one of Justin's friends and their recollection of their final conversation with him.
It was one thing that kind of made me feel weird about whenever he'd talk about his plans for India. And the more I've thought about it, especially over the years, it almost seemed like he was preparing for something because he wanted to be famous. He made that openly clear, like that was his end goal.
When you hear the message Justin left behind, when you hear about the remote and dangerous area where he went missing, when you learn about how the suspects and the police's efforts in this case all quietly started to fade away, you won't be able to stop wondering, what happened? From Tenderfoot TV, Status Untraced is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, or subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus to binge the entire season ad-free. Learn more at tenderfootplus.com.
In today's episode of Case Evidence, I'll be answering questions from our listeners on our voicemail line. If you have questions about the case or the podcast in general, you can leave your question on the voicemail line we have. The number is 770-545-6411. Here's the first question from one of our listeners.
Hi, I lived in Florida about the time that she went missing, and I was wondering, a really big hurricane hit. It was during the Katrina, Rita, Wilma hurricanes that hit, and I was wondering if y'all had considered the traffic that was maybe going through Georgia, because we lost power, gas, and food for months. I was wondering if y'all had considered any traffic that had possibly been coming through during that time.
That's a good point, and I've thought about it before. In August 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit, and there was a huge influx of people coming to Georgia for safety. Tara disappeared in October, just 2 months later. So in theory, people from other states could have been passing through Ocilla at that time. I've looked into it, but I just don't buy the whole complete stranger thing. I believe that whatever happened to Tara, somebody she knew was responsible for it.
So I guess my question to you, does law enforcement enter a sample to the CODIS system? Is there a DNA on file like that? Like, was that glove checked against the police, or was it just completely ignored?
The DNA gathered from the latex glove found in Tara's yard was entered into CODIS. CODIS stands for Combined DNA Index System, and it's the national database for unsolved cases. But, as we know, there's never been a match. The CODIS system only pulls DNA from criminals, not from others in law enforcement. The GBI has also claimed to have swabbed over 200 people in this case, but still no match. It's my assumption that they swabbed everybody, including police officers. But because of the closed records law in Georgia, we don't have access to the actual list.
Hey there, Payne. My name is Rick Harb. I'm down here in Tampa, Florida. Really enjoying the podcast. Just listened to the episode of Case Evidence where you guys gave out the voicemail number. After listening, my current theory is Tara may have been, as one of the people you interviewed said, maybe free with men, and maybe was getting involved with more than one over at the police station, if not just the detective who went to check on her. And you know, my guess is that maybe when he told her he wasn't going to leave his wife, she kind of freaked out and threatened to expose their relationship. And maybe there was more than one officer who the same thing was going on with. maybe one or more than one got together and, you know, took care of the problem and then all got behind each other and to cover it up.
This is always a touchy subject. Personally, I believe that Tara disappeared as a direct result from one of the men in her life. The complicated thing about that is, there was a lot of men in Tara's life. My intent has always been to find out what these relationships were, not to cast any judgment. Ignoring the men in Tara's life would just be completely irresponsible. That being said, I think it's possible that somewhere in these relationships, there was jealousy or fear. In a murder case, these are often motives. For the duration of this podcast, I will continue to explore these relationships, either until they make sense or until we get an answer.
So if it's not normal for her to leave her car unlocked, but her door's locked, wouldn't you assume that the crime took place somewhere else and somebody drove her car back to her house, and when they got out of the car, they took the glove off and dropped it?
Remember, Tara's keys and purse were missing. The front door to her house was locked, and her car was found unlocked in the driveway. But here's a fact in this case that I haven't touched on yet. The driver's seat in her car was found pushed back too far for Tara, almost as if a taller person had driven her car. I've thought about this multiple times, and there might be something to it. We don't know where the crime occurred, but if it occurred somewhere else, it's plausible that somebody returned Tara's car, wearing the gloves, entered her house to return her cell phone, locked the door to her house on the way out, and then accidentally dropped the glove.
Hi, this is Brooke listening in Seattle. My question is, if you know what color the burned truck was that was outside the burned house, if that was a black truck.
Ironically, the burned Ford Expedition that belonged to Michael Langford, found at the fire on Snapdragon Road, was black. As far as the black truck seen passing Tara's house that night, besides the color, it doesn't really match the description. So to be clear, these are most likely two different trucks.
Hi, Payne. I just have been listening very recently, so I'm all caught up. But one thing that I've been curious about the whole time from episode one, you had mentioned that her neighbor, Tara's neighbor, had a system with her set up that when she got home, she'd turn on a light so her neighbor would know that she got home okay. And that just seemed sort of odd to me. It seems like you would only do that if you were maybe worried that something could happen, especially in a small town.
I thought the whole turning on the lamp system was kind of odd, too. The neighbors claim that every night Tara got home, she turned her lamp on to let them know she got home safe. The strange thing to me is, according to the neighbor, that night Tara's lamp didn't come on. And that same night, Tara disappeared. This whole system they had just completely failed. If the lamp system was so serious, then why didn't they say something when her lamp didn't come on? I'm going to Mexico City, and it's going to be an awesome vacation. All thanks to Viator. If you're looking to book your next trip, Viator is your one-stop shop. They've done all the research for you, from classes and workshops, food and drinks, outdoor activities, sightseeing, cruises, tours, museums. Everything you want to do on a vacation is all right here at your fingertips by using Viator. Viator is the solution you need to ensure you plan the perfect trip and overall travel experience. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences all around the world. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences, so you can discover what's out there, no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in. Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means that you can plan something everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been there on the same experiences you're choosing. And if plans changed, there's free cancellation. Plus, Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know that you'll get the support you need at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use the code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Why didn't Tara's mom just drive down to check on her daughter? It sounds like from the evidence that you gave that they're pretty close and they were planning to hang out. And I know if I was a concerned mother for my daughter, I would drive down there and see if she was okay. And if they were supposed to hang out, it seems like in the daytime it would be reasonable to go down and check in the daytime. And I'm wondering why she waited so long to go and see where her daughter was. And why did she have Officer Dykes go down there when she could have gone herself? I wonder what their relationship was like and how close they actually were for her to asked him to go check on her daughter.
I'm not really sure why Tara's mom chose Heath Dykes to go check on her, but from everything I've gathered, her family knew him very well, and for a pretty long time, so I guess she just trusted him. Tara was supposed to meet with her mom during the day, but she never showed. I'm sure at the time she didn't think too much of it, but as time passed and she didn't answer her phone, she became a little concerned. By this time it was late in the evening, around 11 o'clock, and that's when Tara's mom called Heath. Thinking more about it, maybe as her mother, and because Tara was also an adult, she didn't want to randomly show up at her house at midnight, so instead she asked a family friend to do it. Looking at it that way, it makes a little more sense.
Do you think you might be attaching too much suspicion to the fact that the detective dude didn't notice the glove? Think about how many things you move past on a daily basis that if your focus isn't on them, you don't ever even notice. I mean, our brains fill in the gaps with what they expect to be there all the time. And so if you don't expect to see something, you might not see it. Couldn't that be the case with that guy that showed up to check on Tara? The glove could very well have been there, and because that wasn't what he was expecting to find, looking at, looking for, he didn't see it. And I think, yes, he's a detective dude, but that doesn't mean he's on at all points in time with superhuman Sherlock Holmes, you know, noticing every detail.
That's a good point. It's one of those things you can look at two different ways. Maybe he didn't see the glove there. That's totally possible. It was dark, it was late, and he probably wasn't expecting to see it. But that angle is a lot more believable coming from someone with no law enforcement background, or somebody who was just stopping by for a visit. But in this case, we're talking about an actual police officer, and he drove an hour and 15 minutes to her house in the middle of the night, entirely because her mother was worried about her. Her car was in the driveway, but she didn't come to the door. That alone would be a red flag to me.
Hey Payne, this is Jessica, also in Atlanta. I just wanted to put out there a thought that I have about Heath Dykes. I know that the investigator said that he thought that the calls coming in from Heath to Tara, if they were before he'd heard from the mom, that would be suspicious. Actually, I think the opposite. If he'd been calling her during the day that day on Sunday, it's more likely that he didn't know where she was or hadn't had anything to do with her disappearance if he was calling her all that weekend trying to find her.
It's a good point. If you were guilty, then why would you call her so many times knowing she's not going to answer? But why the phone calls at all? If you were just a family friend, this behavior seems kind of odd and obsessive. To call somebody more than 20 times, it makes it look like your relationship with her is more than just a friend.
Hi, Payne. My name is Janae Marquis. I am a PhD student at Georgia State University, and my boyfriend turned me on to your podcast, and we love listening to it and keeping up with the updates. As I was listening to some of the episodes, the one about the email in particular from Tara to Marcus's mother kind of struck a chord with me in terms of the verbiage that she used. And I was talking about this with my boyfriend the other night. The language doesn't seem like someone who is maybe trying to get a boyfriend back in her life or whatever the circumstances were there. The way she made certain phrases, particularly the quote, I think, was, "If this was just about me, I wouldn't want Marcus." And then going on to speak about the family's feelings and whatnot. To me, it sounds like a woman who is carrying a child and is thinking about the life of her unborn child and perhaps that child's relationship to the father and the father's parents inside of the family. So I was just curious to know if that was a theory that maybe came about.
In the emails Tara was sending, it was very apparent that she was still upset about the breakup with Marcus. As of now, I don't have any evidence that Tara was pregnant, but if she was, these emails, like you said, could have a whole new meaning. Tara sent more than one email to Marcus Harper's mom. This was just one of them. In next week's episode, I'll be reading you guys the rest of them. Thanks, guys, for listening to Case Evidence. If you're enjoying this podcast and you want to support, you can go to upandvantage.com/donate and send a donation of any size. It all goes straight into the production of this podcast. Thanks, guys, and I'll see you next week.
Why, hello there. Welcome to Radio Rental. If you're new around here and haven't heard, I'm your host, Terry Carnation. On Radio Rental, we play tapes of the scariest true stories you've ever heard. That's right, we've got real scary stories told by the people that actually experienced them. We've got stories of paranormal peril. near-death experiences, stitches in the space-time continuum, and more. Stories like these.
This person was looking for me. They start to take these long strides towards me. I was freaking out.
We started seeing it everywhere we went. It would be sitting there watching us.
I've never ran so fast in my life.
And it's all set right here at Radio Rental, the video rental shop of your worst nightmares. Radio Rental is available now. Listen 1 week early and ad-free on Tenderfoot Plus.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.